Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues with Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Shohad Kutan, and with me, Julian Ng. And our guest today is Trevor Jason Mark Padassian, if I got that right, sorry, partner at Screen. Trevor, you're from Sabah, which
yes,
accounts
I
for
am.
The very interesting name that you have. Julian, where do we go with the question of bankruptcy? We know there's a proposed law coming on. It's not. Anything filed at this moment goes under the existing law, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So that's just basic facts that we know. Is bankruptcy a huge problem for many Malaysians?
So if I can give some background to this whole situation, there are about almost 300,000 active bankrupts in the country today as of the latest number as of February. And Selangor records the highest number, which is a quarter of the entire bankrupts in the nation. And we also have a big, most of the bankrupts are in the young age group, right?
That's
so right now, what the government is trying to do is to push through these new bankruptcy provisions that to me seems a lot more benign to the bankrupt. Is that right, Trevor?
Yes. Basically, as you say, the bankrupts, the population is about 25 years old to 44 years old, young, as compared to the other demographics. I think the amendments, which haven't come into force, are basically to provide a social protection for and to reduce such bankruptcies. There are a huge, you know, backlogs of bankruptcies all over Malaysia. That is a very worrying problem.
Mm-hmm. And they want to give greater protection to the debtors. How are they proposing to go about doing this?
Various ways. They're trying in terms of social guarantors, where it's guarantors who are not-for-profit. So they are trying to make that you cannot commence bankruptcy against those social guarantors. Also, in terms of bankruptcies per se, you when there's a dispute or when there is an action against a debtor for, say, debt recovery, the debtor can try to initiate what they call a voluntary rescue mechanism. So basically initiate that voluntary interim protection so that it all stays or stops the legal action or bankruptcy. And that was not available before.
This is kind of like the Chapter 11 in the US, right, where the law gives companies that are about to go bankrupt a certain degree of protection to manage their affairs.
That's right. So in here for the individuals, they also, in future, they will have that option to actually stop everything and say, hold on, I just want to try to resolve this instead of being made bankrupt immediately.
Okay, so there is a threshold to being declared a bankrupt as well. I think the number is 30,000 right
currently,
now. Currently.
Currently
is 30,000.
It was raised to 30,000 in October 2003. So now after about 14 years in this year, it will be raised to 50,000.
Okay, and so let's say if I owe a bank 55,000 ringgit and I can't pay that, I would be declared as a bankrupt. And what you're suggesting about these new proposals that are coming in is that the bankrupts can seek some protection with this. How does that work?
Well, it can basically get an interim protection. So instead of the creditor being able to go full speed ahead of filing an action and getting judgment and commencing bankruptcy and making them bankrupt, the debtor can say, I want everything to stop, stay for time being, like time out.
A time out.
So it's kind of breathing space for
correct.
The debtor.
I just want
to interject here. If you have any questions for Trevor, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or text us at 016-201-9000. That's 016-201-9000. I know you don't have to be a bankrupt, but if you think you're in danger of heading down that road, you know, swiping that credit card too often, too many different places, you might want to ask some questions in this show. So I just want to put that out first.
Sure, yeah. Also, you can WhatsApp us because we have kept up with the times, and included social media into our whole repertoire. Now, talk to me about this voluntary arrangement, because this is where it's a kind of pre-bankruptcy rescue mechanism. Is that different from the protection that you just talked about?
That's the one I was talking
That's
about.
That's the one. That's the same one. And now there is somebody overlooking, sitting over the whole process. When I read it, and it sounds a little bit complicated to me, it feels as though that previously you would give any money that you have to, I don't know, is it a creditor? And now you're giving it to someone else who can administer the affairs for you.
You're talking about the pre-bankruptcy rescue mechanism?
Yes.
You're not giving any money. You're basically initiating the debtor has an option to initiate this pre-bankruptcy mechanism by appointing a nominee and also basically liaising with the Director General of Insolvency. And once that's done, there is an interim order to stay everything, including not just bankruptcy actions, even legal action for recovery of debts, for example.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, can I ask you a basic question about why the existing laws are seen as inadequate, why there's this push to amend the laws, and is it about keeping, to sort of best practices globally? Are we trying to get our laws to conform to the best ways of dealing with bankruptcy that we see internationally in other contexts?
Well, in terms of the threshold, i.e. the minimum, 30,000, that's quite average. I think Singapore is similar, Australia is similar in equivalent currencies, Brunei is similar. I think America is very high, much higher. But apart from America, I think the rest are all comparable. The main one is basically they want to make it harder harder for creditors to just get a judgment, commence bankruptcy and make the debtor bankrupt. So that voluntary, that pre-bankruptcy mechanism can be initiated by the debtor. Prior to this, currently, there is no such mechanism. Mm-hmm. And also social guarantors. When, housing loans, housing loans or hire purchase, these guarantors who are called social guarantors, they would be made bankrupt. Although, what the parliament wants is basically to ensure that these social guarantors, there are no bankruptcy against them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I want to return to the social guarantors a little bit later because I think it's so interesting in terms of the kind of impact that it may have on the financial sector. But right now, I just want to get some insights into your work, right? I know Screen is a big law firm, but usually these bankruptcy cases are very small. So do you come across a lot of this kind of bankruptcy cases in your normal course of work?
Well, it depends. Some of law firms act mainly for creditors, some mainly for debtors. We have a lot of creditors, financial institutions as clients. So certain debtors, right, who owing money to our clients. One of the options for recovery of debt would be bankruptcy, mm-hmm. Where the debtors are individuals. So from that perspective, we are exposed to such individuals.
Okay, could you tell us what are some of the businesses or some of the activities by which people get bankrupt? I mean, what do they borrow this money for and end up not being able to pay for them, for the loan?
A lot. I don't know statistically, but a lot of credit card users. And some housing loans,
Okay, and is there any cases of borrowing money for small businesses?
Yes, some.
Some, but mainly credit card and housing loan.
But as I said, statistically, I can't really tell you exactly how
so
much.
So from the point of view of the creditor, right, I mean, is it preferable to make the person who owes you a bankrupt, or are other avenues like some sort of negotiated settlement, some sort of time frame for, paying off those loans a preferable solution? What is it that creditors want and tend to do when they're faced with such a situation, debtors who can't pay their obligations?
It'd be better if, I suppose, you can negotiate and get a full payment of what you can get. But nowadays, the debtors, in most cases, they may not respond or they may challenge. But whatever it is, this enforcement, because bankruptcy is mainly an enforcement, it's post-judgment. It's after you get a judgment against those debtors. It's basically, it will lock into the debtors and prevent them from doing anything so that you may be able to recover with the hope of recovering. There's no, you know, surefire way of getting full recovery or at all. However, these new amendments, which will eventually come to force, is one way of doing what you're talking about. It's basically trying to say, time out and let's try to give a chance to the debtor, right, to negotiate payment, try to make payment. Of course, there's a proposal that's made, but he must comply with the proposal once it's accepted by a majority in number and three quarters in the value of the creditors that to whom he's owing. See, so once they approve it, and he must comply with it. So that's, in one way, it's basically trying to resolve it before litigation, before bankruptcy.
Okay, fascinating stuff. We've been talking about bankruptcy, all laws, and the proposed new laws. Our guest today is Trevor Jason Mark Patasian. He is a partner with Screen, and I'm Sharad Kutan. Julian Ng will be back after this at BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues, and so does Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. Our guest today is Trevor Jason Mark Patasian, a partner with Screen. Julian Ng and myself, Sharad Kutan here. We had a question from Daniel Louis. He says, to the lawyer, how long can this time out last until banks go ahead with their action?
This interim order to stay all bankruptcy or other legal proceedings against a debtor is valid for 90 days.
Mm-hmm. And what was it before? Is this a new provision?
It's a new provision.
This is part
of the voluntary arrangement, part of the pre-bankruptcy
mechanism. So you have 90 days to get your house in order, so to speak.
That's right.
Yeah. I also want to, talking about time frames, right? I do want to talk about how one bankrupt can get discharged from his status, bankruptcy status. Is there anything in the law that has become more lenient?
Currently, there are two ways of getting a discharge. Actually, you can also, it's a third way. If you pay fully, you get annulment, i.e. your bankruptcy orders are cancelled. The second way is the application by the bankrupt. And basically, if he can't pay 100%, he pays a percentage of what he owes, he can get a discharge, and it depends. The creditors may object because the amount they get, the dividends, too low. The court may agree and said no
discharge. This is like the credit card minimum payments, is it, before you get...
There is no minimum payment. Actually, right. There are cases where even 0% percentage, maybe the court finds that he is deserving of a discharge, for example, he or she.
Okay, so bankrupt. Who comes up with this minimum payment for a discharge?
There is no minimum payment for a discharge.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Can I ask a question? Go ahead.
Hang on. Still on this ways to get discharged. And what's the third way?
There's an application to buy or the... It's not an application, but the Director General of Insolvency, and he administers the estate and he's in charge and in control of all the bankrupts in Malaysia. The Director General of Insolvency can issue a certificate of discharge, and that certificate can also be objected to by the creditors.
Okay, isn't there a proposal in the new law to have a kind of automatic discharge?
Yes, there is also an automatic discharge, but this is after period of about 3 years, then the bankrupt can then put in a notice of discharge, right? So long as the bankrupt has complied with certain things like filing a statement of affairs, right? And mm-hmm. if they file a statement of affairs...
What is that?
Basically setting out the assets, setting out the liabilities, right? How much he owes and all that. The clock starts running from that submission of the... statement of affairs, right? Okay. So, and he must also show two things, that he has achieved an amount of target contribution of his provable debt. Provable debt is basically what has been claimed by the creditors and proved by the Director General of Insolvency. So he has to say that basically, you know, I have, you know, reached that amount in terms of contributing and paying to the Director General of Insolvency. And also he's complied with the requirement to render an account of monies and property to the DGI, the Director General of Insolvency. So that is one of his obligations. So long as he complies with that, actually, within 3 years, he can then, you know, write to the DGI and the DGI and ask for a notice of discharge to be issued. The DGI will then serve a notice of discharge, right, to each of the bankrupt's creditors. And the creditors will then have the right to object to it. But, you know, the creditors may object, and then may go to court. And if the court says, right, we'll suspend it, okay? But it's only suspended for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So in total...
Automatically, in total 5 years, right. Automatically after the expiry of that 2 years, then he's discharged.
Free
so that's
go.
Why it's called automatic discharge.
Right.
Although
right.
within the first 3 years, if you're lucky, the court may at first instance say, yes, I agree, discharge.
I want to ask, you know, this is kind of a basic question, but why is it bad to be a bankrupt? And I mean, I know I accuse people of being bankrupt of ideas, but when you're legally declared a bankrupt, is it
what
true?
What are the restrictions?
Yeah, is it true that you can't vote, for instance?
I'm not very sure about voting, but...
what is it that happens to you when you become a bankrupt?
You have a lot of disqualifications. One of it, basically, you can't be a director of a company without leave of court or permission of the Director General of Insolvency. Having an account, you need to...
A bank account?
Yeah. You need, according to the Director General of Insolvency, their practice is that bankrupts must close their account and they can only reactivate their account with the permission of the Director General of Insolvency. And if they want to open it to pay money, for example, to the Director General of Insolvency, they need permission as well from the DGI. Mm-hmm. And that's for payment to DGI or to whatever that they need to.
I think it's also very hard for bankrupts to get a job because many employers would want a declaration of whether you're a bankrupt or not.
You've hit it on a nail. Yeah. It's the taint of bankruptcy.
Yeah,
it's got a quasi... In the early days, it was quasi-criminal. Now, it's a bad reputation.
Because it's a social stigma.
Loss of face as well. Regardless of how some people may manipulate, abuse it, but still, it's a stigma.
Well, let's go back to this idea of social guarantors. And can you tell us again what are social guarantors? These are guys who guarantee like housing loan and loans.
Student loans, maybe?
Correct. And higher purchase agreements. And
Okay,
the running theme is non-profit guarantees.
So you don't have being a social guarantor for profit making, right? You're guaranteeing somebody else's loan so that they can have a better life, for example. That would be a case.
For a loan, for a car,
for a home.
For an education.
Education, yes. Okay. So is there like a moral hazard problem being created here in the sense that the social guarantor can make this guarantor without really thinking too hard about it and then end up getting the protection of the law?
Yeah,
one of the
interesting things is like saying you're vouching for somebody but with no consequence. If they go on and then do some criminal act, it doesn't affect you, right? And the problem with a lot of loans is that people shouldn't be taking loans, that they can't afford to pay off, right?
Exactly. And also with this protection of the social guarantors, would this change the behavior of the lending behavior of the financial institutions?
Firstly, I think it was the rationale behind the amendments is to address the problem. Because previously, even the social guarantors, they'll be made bankrupts, right? And It may have been harsh just because, you know, you guaranteed a scholarship loan or hire purchase or personal housing loan. And there was a huge number of, and currently a huge number, I think statistically, of bankrupts who are in that category. Although from 2003, creditor had to show that he had exhausted all avenues before going after the social guarantor. But still, a lot of bankrupts come under that category. So now the amendments try to address that. There is, I agree, a tension between now allowing such behavior probably to go rampant, you know. But let's wait and see how it will play out. Because at the moment, I think that's the rationale. They try to address that. In terms of the lending, the appetite for risk, the underwriting problem, I think the banks will now, banks or lenders, because banks are not involved in these non-profit guarantees, but in terms of lenders for the social guarantors, their attitude, their policies may change and be more restrictive.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left. Can you just quickly run through what to do if you're a bankrupt? What are the next steps to take?
If you find out that you're a bankrupt, actually go to the nearest Department of Insolvency and prepare a statement of affairs, your assets, your liabilities. Try to find out who your debtors, your creditors are, as well as your debtors, and get instructions from the insolvency officer, because they will tell you. In terms of traveling overseas, make sure that you don't travel without permission of the Director General of Insolvency before going. All your bank accounts and all that, the details should be actually given to the Director General of Insolvency.
Okay, fascinating stuff there. Trevor, Jason, Mark Pardasian, partner at Screen, putting bankrupt into the BFM. Well, hopefully not in that way anyway. B for business and good business.
That's right.
Okay, that's the end of Ringgit
and
Sense.
Bankrupt freeing mechanism.
Julian Ng, myself, Sharad Kuchit, the end of the morning run. Up next, Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.